Greetings. Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the big news of the week, of course, is this ongoing effort to pass some kind of a stimulus. And we'll talk about that. I also want to talk about growing signs of the economy here, the U.S. economy weakening. And, of course, the two are related. I mean, the weakening is getting so serious that the politicians are getting off their ass finally and talking about maybe passing something. Something probably will pass and likely this weekend. What that is, of course, remains to be seen. We'll talk about some of the dimensions of that. It's hard to get a true picture because, the media doesn't really report accurately always what's going on there. But we'll try to sift through that and see what we can glean from what's the status of those negotiations. I also want to talk about the other bailout that's continuing without any hiccup, and that is the Federal Reserve, the central bank, bailing out the banks and big corporations and zombie corporations and so forth. That's continuing, and no one disputes that, you see. That's moved out of Congress. That's why they created the Fed, the central bank, so that the bankers, investors, and others could be bailed out without messy politics, you see. The messy politics has to do with bailing out the rest of us, small businesses and workers and so forth, state and local governments, renters, students, small businesses, et cetera. That's the messy part. That's the part you hear. So there's really two bailouts, you see. Two bailouts. And it's always been that case since 1913 when they created the Federal Reserve, created for the purpose of bailing out the bankers and investors, bypassing the whole political dispute system called Congress. You know, until 1913, there was no central bank in this country, and there was this massive financial crisis in 1907-08. That resulted in a W-shaped Great Recession for 5 years after 1908 until the Federal Reserve was passed in 1913, implemented in 14. And, of course, World War I begins in 14, and that's a massive fiscal stimulus. So the only thing that ended the Great Recession of 1907-08 was massive joint fiscal and monetary spending, joint, both. And, of course, we don't have that, do we? We didn't have that in 2008, 2009. We didn't have it then. Mostly a central bank bailout of the banks. How much did the bankers get? $4 trillion. $4 trillion starting in 2009, $4 trillion over the next 6 years, totally bailed them out, and then some. Yeah, $4 trillion in QE, what they call quantitative easing, right? Zero interest loans, pretty much, you know, 0.1% loans to the banks. And that went on for 6 years until 2015, when the Fed started raising rates again because rates were so low, it had no ammunition to lower rates once again. So when you have a great recession like 2008-09 and now in 2020, you need a combination of massive fiscal stimulus as well as bailing out the banks. Now, the strange thing about this Great Recession 2.0 is that the banks didn't need bailout. No, neither did big businesses. No, they were doing quite well. And the $3 trillion plus already spent, actually more like $4.5 trillion, by the Federal Reserve here to, quote, bail out the banks, unquote, when they didn't really need bailing out. It's kind of like a preemptive bailout. Yeah, they didn't even wait until they actually needed the money. The Fed went ahead and bailed them out. And not only the banks, They're not big corporations, too. And not only big corporations, but even zombie corporations that had gotten overextended, you know, on junk bonds and stock market, ETFs, exchange-traded funds, all kinds of other financial market securities, not just bonds, got bailed out here in March. In March, yeah. And they didn't need it. Why did they not need it? Well, because they had loaded up on cash big time in the month preceding the March crash. As soon as it became apparent that there would be a great recession here with COVID and shutting down the economy, the banks and corporations loaded up on cash. How did they do that? Well, the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates to near zero again, as they did in 2008 and 9. There was free money. Come get the free money. Yeah. And corporations, non-bank corporations, then used the almost zero interest rates to issue corporate bonds. That's raising money. You know, they sell this paper. People, investors buy this paper. Corporate bonds, they're called. Investment grade, you know, solid corporations, and junk grade corporations in trouble, they all sold their bonds. It just came out. You know how much they've sold this year in new bonds issues? Just the Fortune 500 companies? $2.4 trillion. They raised $2.4 trillion. Did they need a bailout when they had that much cash on hand? Not really, you know. But they provided that. It was there sitting there, you know, over $1 trillion. The Fed put in special funds, actually $1.1 trillion in March. Should the banks and should big corporations and financial markets, you know, like asset-backed securities and broker-dealers and mutual funds, those special financial markets, not just stock markets, you see, there's all kind of financial markets. They were all prepared to bail them out, too. But they didn't need to because the interest rates were so cheap and big corporations loaded up on trillions sitting on the cash. They didn't need the bailout. But there was no dispute over that, was there? No. I mean, it was totally agreed by all these folks in Congress and the Federal Reserve. Let's provide all this just in case, you know, they need more money after we give them $2.4 trillion, you know, after that. And actually, it was more than $2.4 trillion. You know, they loaded up on hundreds of billions more, drawing down their credit lines with the banks, big corporations, non-bank corporations. They suspended their dividend payouts. They reduced their operating costs by people not coming in to work, locations, facility costs, and so forth. Well, they raised at least $3 to $4 trillion, yeah, in cash in March. And you know where most of that goes? It goes right into the stock market, makes them even richer, and other financial asset markets, creates the bubble in the stock market. Look what's happening. Every day, almost, record levels in all the three stock markets going on. You know, the NASDAQ, the Dow, S&P 500, all going through the roof. Well, what drives up the prices of those stocks? The demand for those stocks. Well, you got to have money to demand to buy stocks, don't you? Where do the investors get the money? You can trace it back to the Federal Reserve. That's where they get the money, the free money that they invest and drive up the stock market. And their wealth grows and grows and grows. Look, we have 651 billionaires in this country. Before March, their total net wealth was $3 trillion. 651 people, $3 trillion. You know how much it's risen since then? A trillion more. $4 trillion, those billionaires made, you know, a trillion more on the crisis. They made a trillion on, well, they did make it selling stuff, you know, because people can't buy it. They make it by buying stocks. and bonds and other financial assets of all kinds. You see, capitalism has become totally financialized. Capitalists have figured out they can make more money by speculating in financial asset markets, driving prices up, than they can making stuff for people. And if you don't make stuff, you don't make profits. You can't sell it if people can't buy it. And then you don't need to hire so many people. Yeah. Or if you're going to make stuff, set up a plant somewhere in Latin America, you know, where you pay even cheaper wages and no taxes and so forth. If you're going to make stuff, make it offshore. It's more profitable. Onshore, let's just put it in the stock market, right? And that's what's going on. And it's been going on for decades now. It's called neoliberalism, but it's really escalating. And the consequences is that, wealth inequality and income inequality are going through the roof. It's the 1% that are making it hand over fist. And we know what's happening to the rest, don't we? The rest of us. Look, we've got 25 million people unemployed still. Don't believe the phony government media pushed statistic that there's only 10 million and the unemployment rate is 6.7%. That's total bullshit. Yes. And they perpetrate it. They push it, through the media. 6.7 unemployment. No economist of any kind believes it's 6.7% because you just look around at the other government statistic of 20 million people still on unemployment benefits. Well, how can you have only 10 million unemployed, according to the 6.7% phony number, when you got 20 million, twice that, collecting benefits? You got to be unemployed to collect benefits, you know? Yeah, 20 million. Let's talk about benefits. Yesterday, yet another week of first-time unemployment benefit claims. Well over a million a week rising. Look, 3 weeks ago, it was 1 million collecting first time, filing for benefits. 1 million. It's been over 1 million since March. It's been over 1 million since the summer. Before the summer, it was even more. It was 2, 3, 5, 6 million. But now, it's still 1 million. Over 1 million. 3 weeks ago, it was just about 1 million. 2 weeks ago, it was 1.28 million. Yesterday, 1.4 million. Rising, isn't it? Yeah. And then there's the other number they never talk about. And that's how many people are exhausting their unemployment benefits. Millions a week are exhausting. In other words, more people are falling off of their benefits, exhausting the benefits, than there are new people filing and trying to get onto benefits. You exhaust your benefits, you're still unemployed, right? So that 20 million we talk about as the real unemployed collecting benefits is not even the total unemployed picture. You got to add to it those people who are exhausting their benefits, not part of the 20 million anymore. Those are people dropping out of the labor force. How many of those? Well, that's rising. Over 4 million now have dropped out of the labor force since March. 4 million. They're still unemployed. They've given up looking. They're not getting benefits, but they're still unemployed. And the way the U.S. calculates the unemployment rate, if you got more people dropping out of the labor force than you have being hired, the unemployment rate goes down. That's why that 6.7 appears to be going down. Yeah. Because more people are dropping out of the labor force. Well, if you got 4 million minimum of those on top of the 20 million, you got 24 million, right? Oh, but then we have another problem. That is the Labor Department, U.S. Labor Department, that's responsible for unemployment statistics, right? Made a big error back in April. The error was when they interview people to determine the unemployment rate, they ask them, are you out of work and expect to be recalled to work? Furloughed, in other words, right? Well, a lot of workers were furloughed. In other words, they were told to stay home. They weren't working. They were told to stay home, but they were still employed by the company officially, you see. They weren't laid off. They weren't fired. They were still employed. They just weren't getting paid. Well, the Labor Department says, well, you know, if you're working from home and you're furloughed, or you're just at home, you're furloughed, you know, and you expect to return, well, then you're not unemployed. I mean, a big error, obviously. And you know what? That was determined by the Government Accounting Office, the watchdog. Caught them. Caught the Labor Department. Yeah. And the Labor Department, yeah, we made a mistake. But you know what? They never corrected it. They admit mistakes, but they don't change the mistake. It's still the same. If you're furloughed, you're not getting paid, but you haven't been fired or officially laid off from the company, you're considered not unemployed. Yeah. Oxymoron. Definitions of unemployment in this country. Look, there's easily 25 million people still unemployed. And as I said, millions are falling off the unemployment benefit rolls. And next week, 12 million more are set to fall off the unemployment benefit rolls. Look, there's two unemployment benefit systems now. One is the traditional state system, the state unemployment system, where you get benefits for 6 months, right? And then you may not get anything after 6 months if they don't provide 13 weeks of extended. That's what they're negotiating now, okay? And then there is the recognition that the structure of the labor markets have changed in this country, and you have a lot of folks who are workers who are self-employed, gig workers, freelancers, independent contractors, all those folks. And there's millions of those, millions. You've got to add those first-time benefit filings for both of those unemployment systems. Yes, both. And when you add it, last week, yesterday, 855,000 people on the state system filed for the first time, and another 445,000 on the federal independent worker contractor system, called the PUA, filed for the first time. So that's 1.33 million. But now you're going to understand, those aren't the actual numbers still. Those are what's called seasonally adjusted. Seasonality factors. The actual raw number of people who filed for unemployment benefits last week is 1.4 million. That was 70,000 more than the seasonally adjusted number. So 1.4 million people filed for unemployment benefits for the first time last week. That goes on every week, and it's rising. It's rising as COVID begins to impact the economy more seriously again in the winter. We know all those figures. I'm not going to talk about, you know, the infection and the hospitalization and so forth. We get in partial shutdowns again, particularly in certain services. So we got unemployment rising once again. And as you have more and more people losing their jobs, maybe collecting unemployment or exhausting unemployment, you have less consumption going on, less spending by households. You know, there's about 130 million households in this country, working households with multiple workers in it, you know, in the labor force at any given time. So, you know, if you got millions of those people exhausting their unemployment benefits or losing their jobs, it's going to have an impact on consumption. And consumption is 68% of the total U.S. economy, household consumption. 68%. Yeah. Biggest chunk. Yeah. And that is weakening. You know, obviously, if you got more unemployment, people are spending less, consumption is going to go down. And it has been. Look, retail sales, the biggest part of consumption. Big, big numbers here in the last 2 months. Yeah. Corrected number, revised number for the month of October showed a contraction in retail sales. Now, that's the month, October, November, when you get the biggest boost, usually because of the holidays. But in October, and everything in October, and even Amazon moved its big day to October. And we still had negative 0.1, right? Or negative 0.1, 0.1, negative. Okay, doesn't sound like a big number, does it? Well, in November, it dropped 1.1% more over the previous month. So we have two negative months of 68% of the economy. Well, retail sales are about half of that 68%. Right. Two negative months. Supposed to be the biggest positive months. Consumption is going south. Yes. And other areas of the economy are beginning to show signs of slowdown, too. Industrial production, which is made up of manufacturing, utilities, and mining. Well, manufacturing has kept going from the very beginning of this crisis. But manufacturing is only 12% of the total economy. So even if it's growing such a small part of the economy, it's not going to have a big impact. The same with construction. Construction is about 8% of the economy, GDP. Mm-hmm. But that's made up of commercial construction, commercial properties, you know, hotels, office buildings, factories, resorts. That's what we call commercial property, airports, et cetera. And the rest is residential construction, houses. And housing is divided into apartment housing and single-family housing. Now, what you got in construction is only single-family housing growing. Apartment construction is not growing. And on top of that, commercial property is in a depression. That's not growing at all. That's contracting. So construction, the 8% of the economy, is really like 2% is only growing there. And manufacturing, is the same problem. Not much of total manufacturing, not all of it, is growing. And, an important indicator just came out for manufacturing shows that it's about to slow down, too. Industrial production, which includes manufacturing, grew 0.9%, less than 1% in October. But then it slowed down to less than half of that in November, 0.4. So we see the slowing down in manufacturing and utilities. And by the way, you usually get more spending on utilities, heating and so forth, when the economy gets cold. So, that's not growing that much either. And we're seeing now that the hours worked is being cut in manufacturing. That's a sign, an early sign of manufacturing losing its impetus. And in some places like Mid-Atlantic region, around Pennsylvania, New York, places like that, manufacturing slowing dramatically. Not in other places, but there. Auto sales, Look, the auto companies are giving away cars, right? They're trying to get rid of that inventory that built up over the summer. They got all these promotions going on, nothing down. We'll give you $3,000 to pay your state sales tax. On top of that, 0% interest rates, that's a sign that they're desperate in selling. But that can only go on so long, you see. And that is now weakening as well. So as auto's weakened, then manufacturing's going to weaken too. Okay, so the picture is the economy in the fourth quarter is in trouble. Look, we had a 10.5% contraction in GDP terms of the U.S. economy in the first half of this year. 10%. That's massive. It doesn't sound like it, but that's massive. You know? That's trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions of dollars wiped out of the economy. We had a rebound in the third quarter, July, September, rebound of only 7.4%. So about, you know, two-thirds of the economy rebounded in the second quarter, or third quarter, of what was lost in the first half. Now, what are the projections of economists for what's going to happen in the fourth quarter here with all this further slowing going on and unemployment rising? Well, the consensus of most economists is that we're going to see a growth rate for the fourth quarter, October, December, of maybe around 1.5%. Yeah, we're slowing down from 7.4% the third quarter to 1.5% in this quarter. Dramatic slowdown going on right before our eyes. This is not a V-shaped recovery. This is a recovery that's petered out, you know, at maybe 70, 75% total here of what was lost and going in the wrong direction. Most economists are forecasting first quarter of 2021, January to March, as being no growth or negative. In other words, a contraction coming in 2021, a contraction, a double dip. Oh, that's a W shape, not a V shape. That's a W shape. Yeah, by the way, I predicted way back in March. Go read some of my articles on my blog and other public blogs back and magazines that I wrote. You know, when this whole thing began to break in late February, early March, I said, this is a great recession. It's going so deep. Great recessions are always characterized by a deep contraction of the real economy, a deep contraction. And boy, this one was four times worse than 2008-09 in the real economy. Now, that contraction in the real economy can be precipitated by a financial crash right before it. That's what happened in 2008. We had the financial crash that froze up lending. The banks and financial system froze up. Real businesses could not get any loans, operating loans, couldn't keep going. We had massive layoffs, not as massive as now. So consumption froze up for 3 months. I'm talking about the second half of 2008. The real economy then spilled over into a crash as well, following the financial side. Now, great recessions don't necessarily need to have a financial crash to precipitate them. It often happens. Well, it happened, as I said earlier, in 1907-08, right? A financial crash. No stimulus that followed. We didn't even have a central bank, so we couldn't even bail out the bankers. Well, how did the banks get bailed out? Well, the big banks pooled their money in 1907-08 to try to bail themselves out. They couldn't make it happen. So they turned to the U.S. Treasury. And the U.S. Treasury, which was kind of a de facto central bank then, pumped all kind of money into the big banks in 1908-1909 here to stop the crash of the real economy as well as the financial economy. So, in other words, the Treasury was the central bank. And by the way, that's why they created the separate central bank, you see, because the Treasury is part of the executive branch. And it looks like, these bankers caused these crashes. And now the government, these elected politicians, are bailing them out, bailing out the guys who caused the problem. Oh, that's not good politics, you see. That's why they create this central bank, the Federal Reserve, number one function of which is to bail out the banks and the financial system whenever it gets in trouble, and capitalism always has waves of financial crises. So that's why they created the central bank back in 1913-14, right? Because between 1907 and 14, the economy stagnated. We had three recessions, mild ones, a triple dip, followed 1907-08. That's the characteristics of great recessions, right? You have a deep contraction of the real economy, maybe precipitated financially or not, but whatever causes a deeper than normal contraction. You have insufficient stimulus, and the result is a very slow, sluggish, protracted recovery of the real economy. Now, that's exactly what happened in 2008-09, didn't it? Yes, exactly. We had a big financial crash, froze up the real economy. It took 6 years to get back the jobs that were lost. Oh, but the bankers were bailed out right away by 2010, you see, by the Federal Reserve. But Congress drags its heels and doesn't bail the rest of us out. It takes years to bail us out. And in fact, along the way, Congress says, well, we spent so much money at the beginning of this bailout, we got to take some of it back. Austerity. That's what happened under Obama. Yeah, Obama's fiscal stimulus program was $787 billion in 2009. But then in August 2011, he agrees with the Republicans to take back in cuts to spending $1.5 trillion. So he took back twice as much as he put in. That's why we had such a terrible recovery under Obama. That's why it took 6 years to get jobs back. 6 years. Banks were bailed out right away by the Fed. You see, there's this dual bailout system capitalism has. They have the bailout of their financial banker buddies who dominate the economy. Finance capital dominates it. They bail them out right away with the central bank and free money. And then they quibble over how much they're going to spend to bail out the rest of us. You know, and they throw crumbs at us, and then they take some of the crumbs back. That's what goes on. You see, it's a shell game that goes on. It's a bailout shell game, and we've got the same thing going on right now. As I said earlier, the banks weren't even in need of a bailout in March, nor were the big corporations in need of a bailout, except for those, you know, that were in travel and so forth. Yeah. They didn't need it. And they got bailed out by the central bank anyway with super low interest rates that allowed them to borrow $2.4 trillion in the bond markets. Yeah. But the rest of us, what did we get in March? We got a mitigation bill, not a stimulus. The CARES Act is a mitigation bill. And, I mean, the Congress people even called it that. They said, oh, this is just going to buy us 2-3 months. After which time we have to have a real stimulus. Yeah, this is temporary. Mitigation means temporary. Put a floor under the collapse. Would have been even worse than it was without it. Because they spent $1.1 trillion in bailing out small business and workers. They put aside another $1.1 trillion to bail out the big banks and big corporations, but they didn't need to. For reasons I've already stated. So that money was never spent. No. And then they gave $650 billion in tax cuts in March to businesses and corporations, on top of the $4 trillion that Trump had given businesses and investors in 2018. They gave him another $650 billion last March. They didn't need it, but they gave it to them anyway, you see. So big, medium, and big corporations and financial markets got $1.7 trillion in bailout, and the rest of us got $1.1. Yeah. And that 1.1 was gone by August. It's, you know, the programs were suspended. The $600 supplement on unemployment ended. The PPP program, small business bailout, ended in August. By the way, you know, they had appropriated in March $670 billion for small business bailout. They didn't use it all. No, they ended up in August. They shut the program down, sitting on $135 billion of allocated funds for small business that they stopped spending. $135 billion, they sat on it. As if small business didn't need it after that. Look, there's 3.3 million small businesses that have gone under permanently. There's 30 million small businesses in this country, 3.3 million disappeared. And they're disappearing now, since November, by hundreds of thousands a month. Over 100,000 restaurants gone. And that's only the beginning. You know, there's about 660,000 restaurants in this country. You know, one out of six is gone. And you're going to have two, three out of six going to be gone over this winter as well. So, you know, you got this picture of the temporary mitigation, which is only $1.1 trillion. You know, they keep saying, oh, the CARES Act was $3 trillion. No, no. What actually got into the economy is $1.1 trillion, maybe a couple hundred billion more in some of the supplemental bills for hospitals and health care and so forth. You know, and then they spent about, I believe, about $100 billion on medium-sized corporations and some of these other financial markets. And then last month, Mnuchin says, give me the money back that you haven't spent, Fed. And he's taken it back, and he's given it to Mitch McConnell and said, Mitch, you know, you've been saying you're not going to agree to more than $500 billion for the rest of the country. Well, here's $455 billion I got for you, Mitch. In other words, Mitch is negotiating with Pelosi and Schumer, saying, well, I'll agree to $500 billion, but I'm going to use the $500 billion that you negotiated in March. I'm going to reuse that. I'm going to give that back to you. You're not giving us anything. You know, it got so serious here that after the election, finally, a group of centrist Republicans and Democrats got together, called the bipartisan group in the Senate, because the problem's always been the Senate, you see. The Democrats passed the HEROES Act, $3.2 trillion back in late May, which is supposed to be the real stimulus after the mitigation ran out. But McConnell Republicans have blocked it ever since. I've talked about that in previous shows. Now, so after the election, you know, things looking more desperate, the bipartisan group says, okay, let's get together. We got to do something. Here's $908 billion of stimulus, another $908. By the way, of which $455 billion was already allocated. So, you know, they're going to come up with maybe $450 billion more. That's it. It's really net, only $450 billion. Now that they took that money unspent back from the Fed. The Fed was supposed to use it to loan to medium and large corporations. But as I said, they didn't need it. They didn't want to borrow from the Fed, you see? They didn't want that money because there were strings attached, like, oh, you've got to use it to keep people employed. They would rather lay people off, like Boeing. You know, $50 billion of that March CARES Act was allocated for Boeing, another 40-some million for other airlines and airports and travel companies. Yeah. Did Boeing use it? No. Boeing didn't want to borrow that money. It would have to keep its workers employed, you see. Three-fourths had to go to the workers. Boeing wants to lay them off. It laid off 16,000 workers in Seattle and then went and borrowed $25 billion in corporate bonds because the rates are dirt cheap. Yeah, and that occurred everywhere, you know. And then, you know, the airlines, these airlines are crying, oh, you know, we got no money, you know. Give us a loan there. We're going to lay people off. They've been crying that since September. You know, they want 25. Well, you know, in this current negotiations here with the bipartisan group, there's $17 billion for the airlines as well. But you know what? Airlines like Delta and Southwest are sitting on billions of dollars in cash, and they want $17 billion more. Yeah, and they're going to get it. And in this proposal, there's $100 billion more for businesses and investors in tax cuts on top of the $650 billion given to them in March. What else is in the current bipartisan group? What else is in there? Well, unemployment benefits, you know, they ran out as a supplement. The $600 ran out in August, and then $600 for independent workers, contractors, gig workers, is running out on the 26th of December. So they're reinstating that in one half, $300 a week instead of $600 a week for 3 months. That's it, you see. For 3 months. Contrast that to the Federal Reserve this week that said, we're going to keep pumping into the banks and the big businesses $120 billion a month, every month, for the next 3 years, until 2023. Now, 2 years, 2 years plus. Right? We're going to keep giving free money, $100 billion, QE, as they call it, to the banks and big corporations, because now the Fed loans to big corporations, not just bankers. Free money for the next 2 years. That's $3 trillion. Guaranteed they're going to get $3 trillion. Right? And what are the unemployed going to get? $300 for 3 months. They're going to get $3 trillion for 3 years. The rest of us get $300 for 3 months. Now, there's also a proposal in there for $600 checks, income checks, instead of the $1,200, $600. Hey, look, that's not even enough to pay rent, right? You want to talk about rent and evictions? Okay. Yeah. 11.4 million people are behind on their rents. 11.4 million, averaging $5,800. How far is $600 going to go? Not very far. Right? You know, it's a token. That's all. Look, you could solve the rent problem immediately. You know how you would do it? Simple. You give people a 6-month moratorium on rents. You don't have to pay any rent. There's 46 rental units, 46 million rental units in the U.S. You know, for everybody that's in an apartment, you know, owned by a large conglomerate like Blackstone or something, right? Investment, private equity firm, whatever. You know, you don't have to pay rent for 6 months. Well, gee, what's going to happen to the landlords there? They got to pay their loans to their banks, right? Well, we'll tell the landlords, you don't have to pay anything for 6 months either. Oh, but then what happens to the banks? What happens to their loans, right? Well, then, you know, you simply tell the banks, when you get down to where you really need it, you can borrow from the Fed and there's zero interest rates. That's how you can solve that problem. What about student loan debt? You know, 35 million students in forbearance are going to have to start paying double here. Well, there's a 2 or 3 month continued moratorium on that, but starting in March, they're going to have to pay double. Hmm? You could expunge that 35 million people. You know how much back student loan debt that is? That's more than $700 billion. They're going to have to start spending again and being charged interest on once they start having to spend it again. You can eliminate that without any great problem. I mean, that's government debt. Yeah. The government can simply wipe it off its books, and that would be that. Small business. $300 billion in this proposal here in Congress being negotiated right now. $300 billion for small business, PPP program. Well, remember, $135 billion of that was what wasn't spent in March. So, yeah, there's some addition there, right? And now the money doesn't need to be used to keep workers employed, paying wages. No, it's just a free grant now. Okay, there's some for small business. But, you know, there's 20 million small businesses. And a lot of service-based small businesses are in deep trouble. Well, that isn't going to buy you 3 months. That's all that's going to buy, right? $45 billion for our airline friends, despite their billions of dollars on cash. Student loan forbearance for 3 months. A renter evictions moratorium, 1 month. Okay, you won't have to be thrown out of your rent here around the holidays. That's all that is. 1 month. Yeah. $82 billion for education. $13 billion for emergency food assistance. You know, SNAP maybe, you know. And we have these food lines everywhere. Everywhere in this country. That'll buy you maybe a month or two. $35 billion for health care providers. $13 billion more for farmers and agribusiness. Look, that's a boondoggle. You know how much Trump has given the farm sector since his trade war with China began? $70 billion. And now we're going to give him $13 billion. Well, most of that goes to agribusiness, you know, Archer Daniel Midlands and those kind of guys. $25 billion for rent assistance, payable to landlords, you see. In other words, these figures reflect a 2 to 3 month floor. That's all. It's not a solution. It's another mitigation bill. And you know what? McConnell was doing all he can to prevent it. Keeps saying, oh, $500 billion. And then he says, well, you know, I'll drop the liability, business liability proposal that's always just been a stalking horse. And you drop aid, $160 billion, Democrats, Pelosi, Schumer, you drop the aid to state and local governments, right? So we'll take that out. And that's what the bipartisan group did. They have two bills now. One, that's this dead thing, just two provisions in it, you know, for state and local government and business liability. And the rest is what I just indicated in the numbers, the $748 billion. And the bipartisan group had nothing for in checks, you see. But now there's negotiations and around how much more for checks. And they'll probably, you know, with the $600 check, bring that back up to around $900 billion. But $900 billion, you know, is only like how much percent of GDP? $1 trillion? What percent of GDP is that? You know, not much. It's not a stimulus. It's another mitigation bill. That's all this is, to buy another 3 months. And what happens after that? Right? We're right back where we were in August. It peters out. And then what do? Oh, we got to negotiate another one. Instead of really stimulating the economy, which could be done in a whole number of ways. Look, you know, this PPE thing, this personal protective equipment is so disgusting, this situation. You know, PPE, if this was a war economy, you know, back in March, the U.S. would have set up factories to produce the PPE, you know, maybe even just lease it out to companies. But the U.S. wouldn't, the government would not have waited on the private sector to produce PPE because the private sector doesn't want to do it. It wants to keep producing it offshore because it's more profitable, you see. Yeah, we moved all our PPE offshore in the last 20, 30 years, and now we're paying a price. And we're still buying this stuff, masks and everything, from other countries, U.S. corporations in other countries. Yeah, because it's more profitable for businesses to make it there. But if this was a true war economy, the government would have started making all of this, and we wouldn't have the problem we got right now. And what about this home testing? Yeah, we're going to, you know, they've approved this home testing package, right? where for $30 you can find out in 15 minutes if you got COVID. You know where that comes from? Australia. I mean, it is so disgusting the way this government has reacted, both parties, to this crisis. If this were a real war economy, the government would have taken over and done all this. And we wouldn't be where we are right now. By the way, you know, the announcement a couple of days ago, was, or just yesterday, that Pfizer says it's only able to ship half of what it's already produced in the U.S. Why? Because the federal government has no program that says, where is this supposed to go? There is no federal program. There never has been. That incompetent boofus, Trump, made sure of that. All he cares about is the stock market, right? And that's this picture that we are in. You know, no insufficient PPE. We can't even get all of the vaccines out. You know, we got to contract other countries for tests almost a year after this thing has begun. Almost a year. Okay, the latest in negotiations here going on is the Republicans now, you know, as I said, McConnell played the gatekeeper, refused. Now he's softening up, saying, well, maybe I'll agree to $748 billion. Mm-hmm. But now he's just playing hard cop, soft cop, allowing his Rand Paul faction in the Senate to do the blocking. And what's holding it up here today is the Rand Paul group, you know, are saying, we got to make sure the Federal Reserve under Biden doesn't pull an end run on us and start providing funds, you know, loans and funds that will be another backdoor bailout, you know, not just for businesses, but, well, certainly small businesses and so forth. But even unemployed, who knows, you know? So we got to make it clear that the Fed can't do that after Biden takes office. That's what's holding it up. In other words, another maneuver, another legal maneuver to prevent this thing or slow it down. On behalf of McConnell, these guys wouldn't be doing this without McConnell's okay. McConnell's been the problem for 8 months. The Republican Senate has been the problem for 8 months now, preventing a real stimulus from occurring. These guys are criminals. Yes, they're criminals. They're killing, causing untold harm to everybody across this country. You know, McConnell combined with Trump and his administration has just been a disaster. It's destroying the economy. It's the beginning of the end of American empire. We're witnessing it in 2020 right now. It's going to be downhill from here. But in the meantime, people are suffering. Americans are suffering as they never have since the Great Depression of the 1930s. You know, 25 million unemployed, 11 million can't pay their rent, 35 million students doubling up. Public workers are going to have to pay double payroll tax pretty soon come January because of the stupid deferral bullshit by Trump here in August. You know, 3, 4, 5 million small businesses closing forever. You know, you just, well, result is consumption beginning to fall. Manufacturing will follow. But the stock market hits records every day. It's a strange, strange kind of great recession where the rich have never done so well. And it should really be a warning to people that the solutions that they're coming up with are solutions to really take care of the 1%. And, well, the rest of you just have to hustle, you know? We'll throw a few things at you maybe, and we'll see how much you really complain and what you do. You know, 70 million of you will make you believe it's the immigrants, right? And it's the liberals, and it's the Democrats, and it's the socialists, and so forth, right? We'll keep 70 million of you stupid. That's the strategy, and it's working. But it's getting worse, and it can't work forever. Well, that's how we go into the final weeks of this month, of this terrible, terrible year, 2020. And we'll see what happens here in January. But the political crisis isn't over, I don't believe. You know, we're still facing who knows what. And for four more years, you've got proto-fascism growing in this country, and it's not going to stop simply because Trump isn't in the White House. It's going to be challenging economically, challenging politically, and health-wise as well. America's triple crisis continues. Okay, the next couple of weeks I'll be off here because the show will be on Christmas Day and then New Year's Day. But we'll be back, and I'm sure we'll know a big picture here of the economy by early January, of what's happening with the COVID, and also we'll know what's happening politically, because the political crisis, I don't believe, is over. Okay, that's it on this, you know, positive note. I'm sorry, but that's the reality. Let's not pull the plug on what is real. And we'll be talking and meeting again after the first of the year, and we'll see what the future brings in 2021. Okay, I'm out of here. This is Alternative Visions.